WMDX Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media Station.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. Church shooting in Lexington, Kentucky. State police say a gunman shot a trooper this morning at an airport in Fayette County, went to a church in Lexington where police showed up and shot him dead. State police also saying several people at the church were shot. No numbers yet. One of two fires on or near the north rim of the Grand Canyon National Park have burned down the Grand Canyon Lodge, the Visitor Center, and other buildings, says the park superintendent. ABC's Melissa Don in Los Angeles.
Evacuation orders remain in place in Arizona. This is near the Grand Canyon due to these explosive wildfires. The White Sage Fire is nearly 20,000 acres, growing almost 40 times in size over 48 hours. And the flames there are along the north rim of the Grand Canyon National Park.
More rain, up to 5 inches forecast, is again raising the Guadalupe River in central Texas a week after the deadly flood disaster. The search for the missing is suspended. This is ABC News. Waiting for a fire marshal's report, families of victims nearly 2 weeks after the deadly fireworks warehouse explosions and fire in Yolo County, California. There was a vigil near the site.
This is a catastrophe and a tragic accident that took our loved one from us. And I want people to know that we will not forget this, and we will find justice.
7 people died in the fireworks explosions and fire. CAL FIRE says one of the red flags to check out is whether the factory had necessary licenses and permits. 1 out of 3 teens in the U.S. have been diagnosed with prediabetes, says a new CDC report. Advice from ABC News medical correspondent Dr. Darian Sutton.
I think it's really important when you're talking about weight with teens that you emphasize on lifestyle changes and not diet trends. It can be very difficult during that period of life. And the recommendations for activity are a lot more than you would think. For teens and adolescents, it's recommended at least 60 minutes of physical activity a day.
Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
This is your captain. We are going to be experiencing some slight turbulence. Please fasten your... Hold on, just got a video of my cat.
Imagine the pilot of an airplane was as confident as you are texting and driving. Seems kind of crazy when you put it like that.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
The John and Gordy Show.
You know, the thing is, once you tell everybody that it's Trump's tariffs, everybody gets, you know, angry and mad, and they're against it.
Well,
it's because it's a dumb idea.
Yes.
My God, it has nothing to do with the Trump name.
The
we
name.
Don't care. It's a stupid idea. We're paying the higher prices.
Weekday mornings, 6 until 8, on 92.7 WMDX and on the Civic Media app. As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For Civic Media News, I'm Melissa Kay. Who wants to spend their weekday evening learning about the importance of foreign aid? Turns out, more than 2 dozen people at the McMillan Memorial Library in Wisconsin Rapids earlier this week. They were there to hear Greg St. Arnold, an educator based in Milwaukee and former staffer for Senator Russ Feingold. But St. Arnold has also spent years coordinating regional education for the Jesuit Refugee Service in Eastern and Southern Africa. His topic wasn't Congress. It was on the United States' legacy of humanitarianism.
There's 3 reasons why we should all support foreign aid. Number 1 is that it makes us safer as Americans.
Recently, a U.S. humanitarian program has officially sunset. USAID has been around since the 1960s, and the Jesuit Refugee Service utilized some of that funding for their aid work. USAID gives aid during conflicts and natural disasters. Think food to Sudanese farmers facing floods and to improve material conditions for people around the world. The thinking is, foreign aid helps prevent future conflicts that would affect us here at home.
Another way that it makes us safer is by stabilizing unstable situations or unstable areas.
But projects to support food security and combat infectious diseases have been gutted by the Trump administration. With most of its staff laid off, USAID formally closed at the start of the month. St. Arnold says that other countries will step in to fill the gap. But he says USAID spending is smart, strategically and morally.
It was the right thing to do for the United States to be engaged in kind of helping build and stabilize these types of places. And we've just kind of walked away from it.
For Civic Media News, I'm Melissa Kay.
As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, mostly clear, lows in the low 60s. Mostly sunny, upper 80s on your Monday. Clear skies, mid-60s Monday night. Sunshine Tuesday, 87 will be our high. Some showers and thunderstorms possible on Tuesday night. Lows around 68.
It's 79 degrees right now.
John Peterson and Gordy Young.
On our next show, we're talking ice cream because July is ice cream month.
We're going to hit the ice cream trail and we're taking Pam Yonke along with us.
The John and Gordy Show, weekday mornings 6 till 8. A voice for Madison, real news and great conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to the Civic Media Spotlight. To kick us off, we have the Maggie Dawn Show. Kristen Crowell, Executive Director of Fair Share America, joins the Maggie Dawn Show to sound the alarm. And it's all hands on deck as the big, brutal bill heads back to the House of Representatives. She stresses that only a handful of Republicans need to step up, protect their constituents, and stand up to the president. Crowell says outrage is growing on both sides of the aisle, all across the country. There's no rational justification for this bill, but there is real people-powered resistance.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back if you're rejoining us. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, the Senate voted in a tie, so the vice president broke it, and now we've got the big brutal bill to contend with back in the House of Representatives. So our agenda, for those that care about working people in good faith in this country, is to kill the bill and then hold every single Republican in the Senate and the House who voted for it accountable and vote them out in 2026. I've got a great guest to help us understand the ramifications for the middle class folks everywhere, but especially here in Wisconsin. She's a Wisconsinite herself. Her name is Kristen Crowell. She's the executive director of Fair Share America, and she's been on quite the bus tour. Welcome to the show, Kristen.
Thank you so much for having me.
So we've got the approval of the big brutal bill in the Senate, but it's got to go back to the House. So we still have an opportunity to call up our representatives and say no to, frankly, taxpayer-supported handouts for the billionaire class. What should people be doing and thinking about in this moment?
Well, you're absolutely right. This is not a done deal. We are watching exactly how hard it is for the Republicans to muster enough votes. They had, when it was in the House floor the first time, there was a one vote margin, passed by one vote. Then it went to the Senate, ended in a tie. Vice President had to step in to do his minder's bidding and do the bidding of Donald Trump, so got it over the finish line. And there are members, there are Republican senators, Murkowski in particular, yes, that voted yes, but also said, this is terrible for the American people, and we hope this is not the final bill. So it goes back to the House. So it is all hands on deck to do everything we possibly can to register our opposition and to push as hard as possible, because we only need a handful of Republican House members at this point to just stand with their constituents and grow a spine and stand up to the president and deny him the victory and frankly protect us from another handout to the billionaire class.
The thing that seems so perplexing to me, and that I think is so concerning, is one, the just the sheer scale of what we're looking at. This is the by far the largest budget blows to the middle class in American history, of working people that still are living on a razor's edge, right? Yes. And that's the conceit here, if you will. Oh, if you work hard, you'll be okay. That's the social contract. And yet so many people are working hard and they're not okay. This will make them worse. And it is unbelievably unpopular nationwide. I think the sort of sane washing of some of this, the way media talks about it, this is not popular. America, every poll, whether you're talking Fox or Quinnipiac or Marquette poll, when the actual details of this are presented to people, it's overwhelmingly unpopular for both Republicans and Democrats. So why in the hell are Republicans lining up to support this when they know it will cause harm? I don't believe the lies that they're peddling to themselves. Is it because they fear Donald Trump and the MAGA movement? Is that what we're looking at?
I think that is the main question that sane, rational people are asking. Like, how much greed will satisfy the billionaire class? I mean, we're talking about the top 0.01% are going to walk out of this deal with $250,000. But if I have $100 million, what's $250,000? Like, what does it matter? You cannot spend that much money in a lifetime. So it's perplexing. But I should just underscore, this is the most egregious, horrible, mind-blowing piece of legislation ever, like ever even conceptualized in the history of the country. And there is mass pushback happening on the ground. The polling, what we're seeing on the ground all across the country, and I've been really fortunate to be on a national bus tour, Stop the Billionaire Giveaway. We kicked off 11 days ago in New York, and we're going all the way to California. We were in La Crosse this morning. Yesterday, we were in Racine and Oshkosh. And what we are seeing on the ground is that there is an outrage that is coming from both sides of the aisle. This is not just a bunch of lefty Democrats getting real pissed off at the Republicans. This is something like I've never seen before. We have farmers coming out to tell their story. We have small business owners that are like, this is not about business and the economy. This will blow a massive hole in the economy. This is damaging. Obviously, the big headlines are, you know, 16 to 17 million people will lose their healthcare coverage. Another 4 million people may, you know, will lose their food assistance. And Maggie, you're exactly right. We are already stretched to the brink. People are living paycheck to paycheck. 60% of the country right now has about $600 in their checking account. And I don't think they have any idea what that's like to have to make choices between what am I going to pay this week? Am I going to pay the electricity bill? Are we going to get enough money for groceries? Can I make my car payment? It's just mind-blowing.
To put that into context just for Wisconsinites, close to 100,000 Wisconsinites will lose their health care coverage because of the giveaways to the billionaires and mega corporations. So thank you, Tony Weed. Thank you, Derek Van Orten. Thank you to every single Republican in the congressional delegation from the state of Wisconsin. And oh, I left out you, Ron Johnson, who swore up and down that you wouldn't tolerate these increases to the deficit. And yet you lined up as well. 100,000 will lose health care coverage, nearly 100,000 in Wisconsin. Nearly 150,000 will lose their emergency food assistance, and we're going to lose about 2,700 jobs. Now, here's the kicker that just blows my mind, Kristen, is that two-thirds of these job losses, people getting sicker and dying sooner and going hungrier, are happening in the GOP congressional districts. Right. They're running for the hills. If this was some signature piece of I'm so proud of legislation, they'd be showing up at the town halls. How do people make it clear that they need their representatives to actually represent their interests as opposed to the billionaire class? What should folks do?
Well, I mean, this morning in La Crosse, there were about 120 of us that went to Congressman Van Orden's office, banging on the door, just saying, can we have a conversation? Can we meet with you? This was before the Senate ultimately passed it, but it was right in those few hours. They won't even open the door. So there's no rational advice to give to voters other than keep turning out, keep letting the records show we don't stand for this. And it's why we're on the bus tour. We are trying to say there are real people behind these spreadsheets. This isn't just a shell game that you can pass, in Washington behind closed doors. We are real people. We exist. And that if you take this final vote and you vote against us, we're drawing a line in the sand. You're either with us or with the billionaire class, and there will be hell to pay if you side against your own constituents and throw us off healthcare and throw us into a catastrophic economic situation. People are really angry, and, you know, underestimate us at your own peril is the message I would say, because they're so out of touch, which is with what is happening in their own districts.
Right. And Kristen, you're, to your point, there's a record being made of this for all time, not just for the end of the week, not just when we're barbecuing a couple of days over the 4th of July, forever, right? And when we go to the polls on November 3rd of 2026, we're going to remember that as well. Let me ask you also about timing on this. So it's back in the House now. Again, your wonderful bus tour, getting people animated about this in Wisconsin, across the country. Talk to us about the hours that we've got right now to continue that advocacy. When is the vote coming up, do you think, in the House of Representatives? Difficult to know. I know Mike Johnson's still looking for his votes, right? So we don't know exactly how that's going to play out. What's your best prediction about how much time we have to do this incredibly important advocacy?
I mean, today is Tuesday, right? Still?
Right, right.
I think they're looking to bring this to a vote before the 4th of July.
That's what the president wants, right? He wants this. Yep.
They want to have their victory lap. I think it's going to be much harder than they expect to actually pull this off before the 4th of July. But then again, we woke up this morning, we huddled with our folks who are on the Hill in D.C. all night, and we did not expect them to get the vote pulled off by noon today. So it is anyone's guess. There is a clock. We've seen Speaker Johnson take things to the floor before they have things buttoned up to force, you know, people want to go home. Yeah. They're a bunch of whiny, entitled people in Congress, and they want to go home. So my hunch is we're going to see something sooner rather than later, but I think it's going to be really hard to cobble together all of the votes, given especially what Republicans, you know, I talked about Murkowski, Senator Tillis also said, this is going to decimate states. This is going to throw hundreds of thousands of people off. So you don't have to listen to me. Right, you don't have to listen to Democrats. Listen to what the own Republicans who are inside those meetings are saying. This is a disaster.
We actually have that sound from Senator Tom Tillis. It's cut six. Let's take a listen.
Mr. President, I come today to explain my vote yesterday for voting against the motion to proceed on this bill. What do I tell 663,000 people in 2 years or 3 years? When President Trump breaks his promise by pushing them off of Medicaid because the funding's not there anymore, guys. When the White House, which is advising the president, are not telling him that the effect of this bill is to break a promise. And you know, the last time I saw a promise broken around health care, with respect to my friends on the other side of the aisle, it's when somebody said, if you like your health care, you can keep it. If you like your doctor, you can keep it. We found out that wasn't true. That made me the second Republican Speaker of the House since the Civil War, ladies and gentlemen, because we betrayed the promise to the American people. Now, Republicans are about to make a mistake on health care and betraying a promise. It is inescapable.
That is just the bottom line. The president has lied and lied some more. He is enforcing MAGA discipline. Every single elected official on Capitol Hill that votes against the big brutal bill, they know they'll be primaried. But guess what? That's the job that you signed up for. No one's entitled to hold those seats in perpetuity. You damn well better stand up for your constituents.
That's right. I mean, I think the other interesting thing, like, it's fascinating to me to see Musk also tweeting that if you vote for them, he's going to primary them. So, like, maybe just vote with your constituents and stop listening to your daddy minders with their big checkbooks of which check should I pay attention to? Maybe pay attention to your voters and the people in your communities, and then you have a better chance of continuing to do your job.
Going like home, right? Yep. Going home and looking in the mirror and saying, listen, what's right to do here? I represent these constituents. I represent the American people. We need some health care. We need some education, right? We need all these kinds of things to support our economy. $3.3 trillion in a deficit. That can't be a good thing. I'm not the economist that you and Maggie are, but even I know that that's not a good thing.
Folks, big thanks to Kristen Crowell doing the hard work out there on the bus, coast to coast. She's the executive
Executive Director, of Fair Share America. Thank you so much for spending some time with us, Kristen. And we'll see you on the bus tour. Folks, keep it locked for some final thoughts with Jim and I when we return right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Thanks, Kristen.
Thank you.
The Maggie Dawn Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday afternoons from 4 until 6. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
A new choice. Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
Turn it up to 11. This is Atwood Fest. Saturday and Sunday, July 26th and 27th. Music starts at noon each day. Three stages, 30 bands, and plenty of craft and food vendors. Saturday night on the big stage is Fed Function into VO5. And Sunday opens with Steely Dan and closes with the Brothers Almanac, a tribute to the Allman Brothers. For more information and live music schedule, go to atwoodfest.com.
School sports are played by humans, coached by humans, and officiated by humans. So the next time you're sitting in the stands at a school athletic event, please remember this and maintain your humanity, especially when it comes to judging and critiquing athletes, coaches, and officials. Please show your fellow humans some respect. They'll appreciate your empathy.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
You want to feel important.
You want to be part of something bigger, something that matters and can help change things.
You want to feel like you belong.
We know. We felt that way too. And that's why we did something about it.
We aren't just Army National Guard soldiers.
We are normal people just like you. But our part-time service in the Army National Guard means we get to be more.
When our communities are in need, we get the chance to stand up and do something about it.
We get to serve in our own region and help the people we call neighbors.
From the lake shores of Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota.
The fertile fields of Indiana, Illinois, and Iowa to the wide open plains of North and South Dakota.
We are here for our hometowns.
And together, we can make a difference. Take on your legacy. Visit NationalGuard.com to find out more.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
I was stuck in a state of panic and endless rituals, so I made the call.
Mental health care works when you make the call. Visit mentalhealthcareworks.org. A message from the American Psychiatric Association Foundation.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Up next, we shift our focus to the John and Gordy Show. John and Gordy chat with Brian Belafant, author of the hit novel The Sultan of Garbage. Brian describes the importance of keeping our parks clean, especially for the 4th of July. He went into depth about his findings he put into his novel and the reason behind writing a book about the island of garbage.
WMDX 92.7, it's John Peterson, Gordy Young in the morning.
Beautiful sunshine today for this first day of July. Right now, 63 degrees, highs in the low 80s today. This portion of the show brought to you by Verlo Mattress. You can wake up and sleep better on a Verlo mattress. A lot has changed since 1958, but some things have remained constant throughout Verlo's history. They're still direct-to-consumer, and they still provide superior products at unbeatable prices. Verlo Mattress, two Madison locations, east side and west side. Go to Verlo.com for more information. All right. Time for us to welcome into the show Brian Belafant. Good morning, Brian. Good to have you with us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, yes.
So you wrote this book called The Sultan of Garbage.
That's right. The garbage island that we have out in the Pacific.
That was some sort of inspiration for the title of this book.
That's right.
So this is a novel, I take it, right?
Well, it's actually a very short novel or novella, but yeah. It's fiction story.
Now, one of the things that, you know, I think your background has a lot to do with the inspiration for this particular novella. So tell us about a little bit about your background. Yeah, you're a photographer and you really make enticing pictures for the public.
Well, actually, it's actually more connected to, I worked in advertising. I started out as a copywriter, and I just had this really kind of amazing trajectory of my career, and I ended up being, got to the point where I was making Super Bowl commercials. So it was kind of the big leagues.
Wow.
And yeah. I had this realization that I was helping to sort of help create and perpetuate a culture of consumption and waste.
Mm-hmm.
And the book kind of serves as a form of, I don't want to say penance, but an examination, really.
Right. And you said in your bio here that you pushed Pepsi, Nissan, Taco Bell, Toyota, and Frito-Lay. Of course, there are a lot of packaging in that, end up in the ocean, in the Pacific, yeah, on a giant island. So this is your way of, telling that story in this novella, correct?
Sort of, yeah. I mean, it's basically the hero of the story is a very limited version of me, I suppose, a guy who makes his living helping he photographs packages and products, mm-hmm, and he comes to realize that, it's driven by his personal life is falling apart. He's got a girlfriend who doesn't appreciate him and friends who want to take advantage of him. Comes into money and something tells him that as a photographer, it would be cool to go out and photograph this island of garbage. And that's the starting point.
So, Brian, have you actually done that? I mean, did you go out and check out the Great Pacific Garbage Patch? I guess that's what they call it. Did you do some investigation into that or take photos?
I did some investigation, and it is not the way it appears in the book. It's worse. It's not something that you can, but we have this picture in our minds that this island is actually an island where you can like climb onto it like it's land and mm-hmm, see refrigerators and use tires and stuff. And it's really more, it's where the plastic goes to, I don't want to say die because it takes a long time to die, but in the oceans, and this is all of the oceans, the currents, the way they swirl, this stuff sort of congeals. And the worst part of it is, I read a statistic that 70% of the crap that goes into the ocean actually sinks. So we're only seeing, when you see any of it, you're seeing less than a third.
Well, it's like a glacier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So how did that become central to your story? How do you work that in?
Well, it's in the story, it works as a metaphor for the guy's life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny when, thing that people ask me a lot is about the research that went into the book. And I feel a little bit guilty because the research about the character and the profession and all the stuff that goes into making these images and these messages, that comes from my personal experience. So I didn't have to do much research. I did that stuff. But the stuff about the island of garbage and recycling and waste, mostly I said to myself, what would be the worst case scenario? I wrote it down and then I went back and I looked it up. And a lot of times I wasn't even close.
Wow. Well, we're all experiencing microplastics in our brain now, so this is a perfect time for us to talk about that island.
You're absolutely right. In the story and in my mind, it's the big pieces that, because they're big.
Yeah.
You think of lions because they're, big and scary, but there are a lot of other creatures that can be dangerous. The microplastics are, I think, a lot more of a problem than the used refrigerator that ends up in the river or whatever. They do get into our brains. They're in our water supplies. And we don't know yet just how bad they are, but we get a sense that they're pretty bad.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have another book. I was just kind of curious about this. You say, Spouse Hunting, Using the Rules of Real Estate to Find the Love of Your Life. And in parentheses, spoiler alert, it works.
What?
Yeah. And kudos to you for digging that up. Yeah. Okay, so let's start with, when I started...
Wait, we have 1 minute.
We only have about a minute left, so...
Yeah, the book works. I met somebody.
Okay, right.
Just believe it. Pick up the book and do what you're actually advising them to do.
So that one's called Spouse Hunting.
It's a how-to.
Using the Rules of Real Estate. The book that we were talking about, Sultan of Garbage. Brian Belafonte, thank you for joining us
and
today.
Bringing us to that island in the ocean.
Thank you. And if anybody wants to check me out, I'm at bellefant.com.
Very good.
B-E-L-E-F-A-N-T.
All right.
Very good. Thank you, Brian. Coming up in our 7 o'clock hour, a little bit later on, we'll talk to Liz Johnston about keeping your pets safe and calm during the 4th of July weekend. That's coming up later on John and Gordy in the Morning.
They slip away.
The John and Gordy Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WMDX weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
Welcome to Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
As Wisconsin has a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. Church shooting in Lexington, Kentucky. State police say a gunman shot a trooper this morning at an airport in Fayette County, went to a church in Lexington where police showed up and shot him dead. State police also saying several people at the church were shot. No numbers yet. One of two fires on or near the north rim of the Grand Canyon National Park have burned down the Grand Canyon Lodge, the Visitor Center, and other buildings, says the park superintendent. ABC's Melissa Don in Los Angeles.
Evacuation orders remain in place in Arizona. This is near the Grand Canyon due to these explosive wildfires. The White Sage Fire is nearly 20,000 acres, growing almost 40 times in size over 48 hours. And the flames there are along the north rim of the Grand Canyon National Park.
More rain, up to 5 inches forecast, is again raising the Guadalupe River in central Texas a week after the deadly flood disaster. The search for the missing is suspended. This is ABC News.
The Brewers win a thriller.
Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from American Family Field, where the Brewers and Nationals wrap up their series here today. The crew with a thrilling 6-5 win over Washington last night. Milwaukee down 5-3, bottom of the ninth. Andrew Vaughn at the plate on FanDuel Wisconsin.
Finnegan deals. Vaughn, line drive.
Caleb Durbin later drove in Andrew Monasterio for the winning run. Manager Pat Murphy on the effort Monasterio has shown.
The great thing about having the right people. This kid every day says, I want to stay in the big leagues.
The Brewers have now won 6 in a row. The Nationals have lost 7 of their last 10.
I'm going to say, you got to keep your head up. You know, got to go back and do it again.
That's the Nationals manager Miguel Cairo with Sports on Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Mariska Hargitay has experienced an almost unprecedented run as an actor on the show Law & Order Special Victims Unit. And now she has a director's credit as well. She is the creative force behind a documentary about her late mother, Jane Mansfield, called My Mom Jane. The Hollywood Reporter is now saying the documentary will be eligible for the Oscars since it's been revealed that it had a short theatrical run at a North Hollywood movie theater last week. My Mom Jane is available to stream on HBO and is getting very good reviews. Sarah Jessica Parker feels she had to defend herself for not endorsing a political candidate publicly. The And Just Like That and Sex and the City star told Nicole Wallace on her podcast she didn't believe social media was the place for quick political conversations. To her credit, Parker says she's not going to go into an argument unless she is totally educated on an issue. Imagine that. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin has a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, mostly clear, lows in the low 60s. Mostly sunny, upper 80s on your Monday. Clear skies, mid-60s Monday night. Sunshine Tuesday, 87 will be our high. Some showers and thunderstorms possible on Tuesday night. Lows around 68.
It's 79 degrees right now.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
I get why you, Senator Royce, were a no vote on this budget. I think the people that voted no on this were standing up for public education.
I think that's exactly right. We heard from people loud and clear in this budget cycle and 2 years ago, the number one priority that people asked for, whether they called, emailed, or showed up at the public hearings, they want our schools funded. Our kids deserve better schools. They have been underfunded for decades, and it is time for us to prioritize public education.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station, and on the app.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Maggie Dawn.
Matt Rothschild is in the guest host seat with me on Monday. We keep you up to date. Who's out and who's in? Is it Bongino and Patel or Bondi at the DOJ?
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
We come back to the Civic Media Spotlight with the Matt and Air on Air Show. Matt and Air on Air is joined by Alex Brusen, a volunteer for We Got This, a nonprofit located in the 53206 zip code of Milwaukee. Their mission is to get kids familiar with gardening. We talk about the history of the organization and how kids go about getting employed for the morning. They are paid for their efforts, and it's not just about gardening. They learn about the processes from seed to harvest and get lessons in financial literacy and management.
Good morning and welcome to Matt and Air on Air. Jane Matt and Air, Greg Bach, and Cal B on the board. Coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Delighted to be joined by our next guest. And thank you to Sue from Franklin, who is the one who emailed us at janesays@civicmedia.us and said, you should talk to these people. So Alex Brusen is here. He is the executive director of We Got This Milwaukee. Alex, thank you so much for being here. How are you doing this morning?
Real good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Again, one of our listeners had reached out to us and said, you should talk to this organization. They're fantastic. So tell us a little bit about We Got This in Milwaukee. And it's a gardening project, essentially, that you do, right?
Yeah, so we're located in the 53206 zip code. 53206 is the poorest zip code in the state of Wisconsin. And our zip code has over 800 vacant lots that the city owns. And it's a ton of land, a tremendous amount of land. And, you know, anytime a piece of property isn't owned by an individual or an organization, I mean, it's taken care of, but it tends to be a liability. Yep. More than an asset.
Sure.
And so, you know, We Got This was started about 15 years ago by a man named Andre Lealis, and we take vacant lots inside the city of Milwaukee, specifically right around our neighborhood, and we transform them into gardens. And we do that by employing young people from the neighborhood on Saturday mornings in the summer. So last Saturday or yesterday, we had about, or 2 days ago, we had about 150 kids come out, and they're slowly building out these garden spaces in the neighborhood.
That's really cool.
That's amazing.
That is cool. This must be a first for some of these kids to be this active in gardening, I would imagine.
Gardening and work in general. And, you know, I think as adults, we take for granted, you know, we go to work, we do things, and we provide an income for ourselves and for our family. But kids in my neighborhood, I live around the corner from the We Got This garden. You know, kids in my neighborhood don't necessarily get that first opportunity. When I was 12, I was mowing my neighbor's lawn, and she gave me $10 after it. And you learn, okay, I do work that has a value, and that I'm paid for that work.
Right.
You know, in our neighborhood, you don't have those opportunities. So yes, for many of the kids, it's their very first work opportunity, which is great. We love that because we get to teach them, here is how you work. There's a difference between work and play. And, you know, work requires effort. And we'll walk you through that process. But we do expect, you know, you to be working when you're at work.
Well, and it's, as you said, though, Alex, it's just the basics of you have to show up on time. You have people who
have to tell you about that in a second.
Yeah. But I mean, I knew someone who was a teacher at a high school, and he was in charge of the theater department, and they had a spring play every year. And one year, the kid who was the lead actor in the play just didn't show up. And he said, well, I had something else to do. It's a commitment. Yeah, you have to stay with this.
And I'm really glad you brought up showing up on time. So we have a capacity at We Got This. So, you know, throughout the year, we collect donations, and, you know, the kids are paid through the donations to the organization. We're a 501c3. And so somewhere in the late winter, early spring, we set our capacity based, you know, how much money we have divided by 12 weeks of the summer program. That's how many kids can show up.
Sure.
So our capacity is somewhere around between 125 and 150. And we have we've established a little bit of notoriety in the neighborhood to the point where kids are showing up earlier and earlier and earlier. The first kid showed up on Saturday at 6 o'clock in the morning, and we started 8. So wow. Just to get a spot. And we reached capacity at 7:40. And unfortunately, we had to turn some kids away because they only got so much money.
Right.
But yeah, it's and we expect, you know, each week progressively throughout the rest of the summer that we'll reach capacity earlier and earlier, which has been what's happened historically.
So it's essentially, though, once you reach your max, that's it. That whoever shows up that day who wants to take part, you're going to take. It's first come, first serve.
Correct.
And are you seeing kids coming through like every week? Like you see the same faces coming through, and they're it's like a job to them. It's a once a week job for them. They're doing the thing, and you know, I gotta get up at 5:30, gotta get over to the site and get my spot.
Yeah, we have a lot of regular kids. I would say about of the 150, about 20% were new this past wow. week. So we still get some new kids, you know, word of mouth. But we have a lot of returners, and this year we've really started to add different layers of leadership into the programming. And so we have dedicated student leaders that help lead little groups. I was a school teacher and an administrator for 15 years. And so we run it like you would run a school. So there's different classes that the kids go into, and that's just the group that they're a part of. But we have like some of that, some of those, what would be like the teacher of the group is a 19-year-old that was in the program the last 3 years. And so we try to keep establishing different layers of leadership so that, you know, kids can kind of grow as we grow and then take on more responsibility.
That's so valuable, Alex. Jeez. Seriously, though, to give some of these kids the opportunity to learn what it takes to manage what it learned. I mean, that's,
yeah.
It's just this hands-on experience that's just got to make such a difference for these kids. If you're just joining us, Alex Brusnan is our guest. We're talking about the We Got This Garden that is in Milwaukee and runs over the summer. And I'm, what do you hear from these kids after the first month? Say that they've been returning for a month. What are you hearing from some of these kids?
Well, you know, when the kids get paid out at the end of the day on Saturday, you know, I'm pretty aware of the fact that I have to, like, ask them these specific questions. You know, what did you learn? And then they'll tell me, okay, I learned, you know, the whatever the gardening task was. I learned how to plant potatoes because we planted potatoes yesterday. I would say, you know, 9 out of 10 kids will tell you they had a good time. Because, you know, work, you're supposed to enjoy the work that you do.
Right.
And as an adult, you strive for that, right? You want to be doing these things that you enjoy. And then we talk a ton about what you're proud of. Because most of the kids live in the neighborhood. And they'll walk by the we have a garden that we installed next to a liquor store. So we call it the liquor store garden. And so, you know, some of the kids live next to the liquor store garden and walk by it all the time. And so you'll hear from them like, oh, I was walking by on Thursday and I saw the zinnias coming up because we're growing some flowers over there. And, you know, they'll tell me, OK, well, you know, I was reminded of when I put those boxes together or I filled those boxes or I planted those flowers. And so you can tell, you know, it's doing something in the neighborhood in terms of creating a sense of pride in the community.
And it's something they're going to remember, too. I mean, also, like, just the notion of them walking past the garden and not just say, like, to hear a child say the zinnias are coming in is something that would make me so happy. But also to look at me like, oh, I make sure next week I water it a little bit more or do this thing because I'm noticing.
Right.
Like, they're also understanding the process of how plants and gardening works, that they can troubleshoot something maybe in someone else's garden. Like, oh, I used to work in a gardening place and I can tell you need more water or you need this soil. And that is something you can be proud of, but that's also an employable skill.
Yeah. Yeah. And we talk about that a lot. You know, the little tasks that you do, all a job is a set of, or a series of little tasks that you do, and you try to do them at a high level. And so you can take, you know, what you learned here, you may not go and be a gardener, but if you work construction, you know, you got to learn how to measure and cut and make sure that it looks right and, you know, have a high attention to detail. And so we talk about all those things. So each at sort of towards the end of the workday, The kids sit in a circle with their group leader, and we have a series of questions that they kind of run through, really because we want them to reflect on the experience that they're having. Yes, you get $20, and that's cool and fun. And we have a dedicated group of lunch ladies that come and provide lunch right at the end of it. But we want you to stop and think for a second, you know, what did you do? How did you add value to the community? Because in our community, it's a struggle over here. There's not a lot of things that you can point at and look at and say, I added value to this. This gives kids an opportunity to say that they were able to do that.
I know, and I don't want to say it's only $20. It's $20. And to a kid, $20 is a lot. Is there any talk about hey, what am I going to do with this $20? Am I going to spend five on myself, put 15 away? Or do you have discussions on financial literacy with the pay they get?
Yeah, we do. We talk, and that's you know, two of the 12 weeks we'll talk about some of those financial literacy components, assets versus liabilities, and how to avoid going into debt. Nice. And okay, now you have this $20 and you've come for 10 weeks in a row. Now you have $200. You know, by the end of the summer, do you want $200 in your pocket to maybe buy yourself school clothes for the year, or do you want to spend it at the corner store on Flamin' Hots or whatever kids buy?
And is there more leaning towards the Flamin' Hots? I'm just curious.
I think, like I said, I worked in schools for a very long time, and part of my time was working at an alternative school. And you get some kids who have a really negative disposition towards school and work, and sometimes just existing in the world.
Yeah.
But when you stop an individual and you have what you hopefully perceive to be a meaningful conversation with them about, and help them think about what it might be like 10 weeks from now, mm-hmm. to have something that's a little bit different than you have today, you'd be surprised. A lot of them will say, yeah, I saved up my 20s and I went, you know, wherever, I don't know where they go, but
right.
wherever they go to buy, you know, shoes or pants or clothes. A lot of times it's clothes for school.
Which is fantastic. Yeah. And I give them a lot of credit for that, because there are adults who cannot hang on to money and think about the long-term reward down the road.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a really valuable thing. I just think what you're doing is so important, especially if you are not seeing that in your community or your family history.
Right.
It's just so important. Alex Brusnan is our guest. He is the executive director of We Got This Garden here in Milwaukee.
And I think that there must be some kids who think, you know, I'm just going to go garden and get $20. And then after this, I'm like, oh, no, I've learned a whole host of things. Because that's the thing. Everything you've been talking to us about, Alex, is not just the gardening is a component, but it's a piece of the entire puzzle that they walk away and go, oh, I got lessons in life from this.
Yeah, whether they like it or not. I'm going to make sure that they get them.
I wanted to buy Takis, but man, I bought good shoes for school.
Instead, Alex, we only have about 2 minutes left. Is there a big banquet at the end of the summer? I mean, with all of this stuff that they've harvested and stuff?
Yeah. Oh, sure. So all the food is given out to the community. So kids take the food when it's harvested. They can take it home with them. Otherwise, it's just given back out to the community.
Awesome.
We do at the end of the season, we have, just our end of the year celebration. And we'll do like a big back to school kind of giveaway. And so we'll source things. I should mention our website, wegotthismke.com. We have an Amazon wish list that will be more focused towards end of the year items. A couple thousand dollars worth of back to school items have been donated in the past, and we anticipate will be donated again just to give out to the kids. And so we do kind of a big celebration.
We're going to include your link in our show notes so people can find out if they want to get involved.
Jane, if a listener wanted to follow along, we have a podcast that kind of like is like a weekly recap. It's called the 53206 cast. If a listener wanted to follow along, we give like weekly updates on We Got This.
Fantastic.
Year. I'll put that in the show notes as well.
Alex Brusnan is with We Got This Garden Milwaukee. It's been so interesting, Alex. Thank you so much for your time. Really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Coming up, we'll wrap up the show with This Shouldn't Be a Thing, Hush Your Mouth edition. Stay with us. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Matt Nair on Air is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 9 to 11. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. As Wisconsin is summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. 5 years after the fake elector scheme to overturn the 2020 election, legal accountability is grinding along for some of the conspirators and those who wittingly or unwittingly supported them. But pardons may be in the wind, too. May 27th, a three-judge New York appellate court stripped Trump campaign attorney Kenneth Chesbrough, an alleged key organizer of the swing state fake elector scheme, of his license to practice law in New York. June 16th, the alleged mastermind of the fake elector scheme, John Eastman, was recommended for disbarment in California. He can still appeal the decision. Also June 16th, a civil jury found MyPillow CEO and election denier Mike Lindell liable for $2.3 million for defaming former Dominion Voting Systems executive Eric Coomer. Dominion itself has a claim pending against Lindell, right-leaning news outlets, and several other Trump-alleged conspirators and collaborators. The Michigan Advance reported July 5th that a hearing on whether the trial of 15 of 16 Michigan fake electors should go forward has been moved to September 9th. A trial in Arizona is scheduled for January 5th, 2026, for the alleged fake electors and Trump associates, including his former chief of staff, Mark Meadows. Mother Jones reported June 4th that President Donald Trump's pardon attorney was considering pardons for the accused fake electors. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In a chaotic and somewhat discombobulating end to the process, Wisconsin lawmakers passed a state budget and Governor Tony Evers signed it into law at about 1:30 a.m. on July 3rd. What made this budget different from the others signed in this era of divided government is that Democratic votes were needed to pass the budget in the state Senate. Part of the reason that was made possible is because of new, fairer maps. Last November, Senate Democrats flipped four seats, shrinking the Republican majority to just an 18-15 margin. Now, candidates are already lining up to take this the rest of the way and flip the chamber. Democrat Jenna Jacobson, who currently serves in the Assembly, is now running for Senate, challenging Republican Howard Markline in the 17th District. If Democrats can flip that district and one more seat, they could control the state Senate for the first time in more than 15 years. That would be a big deal for state politics in Wisconsin.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
Hey, Wisconsin, it's construction season, and the Wisconsin DOT wants to help you safely navigate work zones in your area. Check 511WI.gov or download the free 511 app to see current road work, closures, detours, and camera views on your route. Wherever your travels take you, know before you go with 511WI.gov. That's 511WI.gov. And remember, know before you go. Always park the phone while driving. Sponsored by the Wisconsin DOT.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
To finish out the hour on the Civic Media Spotlight, we have Valley Focus. Jennifer Skolaski, who's the project manager for the Winnebago County Overdose Fatality Review Team, and Maddie Brigger, who's the community health strategist for Winnebago County Public Health, join Lisa and Todd on Valley Focus to talk about Winnebago's significant decrease in overdose deaths from 2023 to 2024. And they also discuss the programs and initiatives that have led to the progress and their plans to continue the work.
We will get back to Mino and the mayor, but first from the WISS studios, it's producer Todd and new Wisco News Bureau Chief, woo, Lisa Hale.
And you did it right again. I'm getting so proud of you.
Gotta be proud of something, that's for sure.
Today, joining us on Valley Focus, we have Michelle Schmidt-Schultz. I got it all in there.
And I got it all in there.
And she's with the Oshkosh Farmers Market. Welcome.
Hi, it's great to be here again.
You've had a great kickoff. I mean, so far the season's been very good for the farmer's market.
Yeah, opening day was outrageous.
I heard rumors or something that maybe we had like a...
We had a record number of vendors on opening day. We had 139 vendors, which opening day, it's about 30 more than we usually have. So it was crazy. And attendance was off the charts. It was shoulder to shoulder on the streets. And the best part about opening day was there was absolutely no incidents. weeds. That is always good. As we were cleaning up the streets with the police department, the CSOs that were on duty, they're like, we did not get one call for the farmer's market today. And I'm like, that is freaking amazing.
I suppose when you grade things, you look at attendance and weather and then incidents.
Yeah, incidents. So it was an absolutely perfect opening market if there was ever going to be one.
I mean,
everybody was great. And vendors were selling out by 10:30, 11 o'clock. So thanks everyone who supported that farmer's market on opening day.
Now, opening day was great, but now we're looking at July, and I know we've got some stuff this weekend and next to talk about. Let's talk about this weekend first,
though. Well, this coming weekend, with it being the 4th of July weekend, we actually have some retired veterans that hang out in our market tent with us, and we have Flag Day for Kids. And so what that means is that the veterans will be in the tents handing out flags for kids at the farmer's market. So it's kind of fun to see 500 flags blowing around the farmer's market.
I will tell you that as a show, Mino and the Mayor, we really support our local veterans. I mean, it's a big part of what we do. We do a feature every week, thanks to Nate Olson from Olson Legal Group, but it's really kind of hits us home in the heart, right? Yes. I mean, and so it's nice to see a community event like the farmers market step up and say it's a way of saying thank you.
Exactly. And you know, the Oshkosh farmers market really prides itself on being a community event. So we really try to embrace everyone as much as we can. We try to give everyone a spotlight at the market.
And I can just imagine seeing all the wee ones running around with those flags. It's going to be a field of red, white, and blue.
It is a field of red, white, and blue. Exactly. And lots of smiles. Lots of smiles.
And that's this coming weekend. But I know next weekend at the farmer's market, it's also going to be a big one.
Yeah. So we go from July 4th to...
We go from July 4th to Christmas in July.
Perfect.
So Christmas in July, of course, we will have Santa Claus, and he'll be checking his list. So make sure you're on the nice list that day.
I'm in trouble, Michelle. Let me just say that.
But Christmas in July has kind of blossomed into a support for both the Oshkosh Area Community Pantry and the Salvation Army. So with the Oshkosh Area Community Pantry, they actually come down with shopping carts and their big truck, and they put up signs where customers can buy two items from a vendor and take one home and donate one. And so they don't have to go donate it at the pantry. The pantry actually goes around the market and picks up all these items and loads them on their truck to take back to the pantry. Last year, our farmers market goers donated over $1,000 worth of produce.
Wow.
Or 1,000 pounds of produce, I'm sorry.
That's amazing.
That is amazing.
That's a lot of fresh vegetables for people that don't typically have access to that type of produce. So,
absolutely.
So it's, I really like the idea that the pantry came up with. It's a fabulous one.
You also mentioned before we went on about the fact that the bell ringers will be
there.
That's
right. And it's what do we all see at Christmas time?
Ding, ding, red kettlebells. That's right.
You will see them at the Oshkosh Farmers Market for Christmas in July at the Farmers Market. So you'll find the Salvation Army collecting in their red kettles on the south end of the market.
You know, I was just thinking, we should dress up for Christmas in July. And then it hit me. No, I am not wearing some fur-lined velvet red thing. But I can just see Santa in shorts at Christmas in July.
Well, he's going to be there, right?
Yeah, Santa's going to be there. And Santa looks just like Santa, but he'll have his red, white, and blue vest on. So.
Gotcha. Perfect. Because I was kind of worried about Santa. Yeah. You know, that red suit could be a little hot in the summertime.
Yeah, he gets a little toasty.
Yeah, just a little bit. Fur-lined, velvet.
But we give him a nice shady tent and give him lots of water.
That is amazing. So is there...
Wait a minute. No cookies and milk? Come on.
Well, I'm sure there's somebody selling cookies.
Probably.
At the farmer's market. Right. We can get
There'll
him some
be
cookies.
Plenty of cookies and milk, I'm sure.
With everything that happens at the farmer's market, this is just something that is completely free.
Correct.
To the entire community. Correct. You just walk the farmer's market. If you want to buy produce or flowers or baked goods, you can.
You can. And but if you just want to graze the market, you can. If you just want to just check out the sights, the people watching is phenomenal down there.
So Lisa and I went the first week, and we did the grazing. So we hit up various places to eat.
Did you try any of the new vendors?
We haven't yet.
Okay.
We haven't yet.
We have a favorite one that we go to every single time. I mean, anytime his truck is around, you're going to find both Todd and I going, give us food.
But we do want to try the new Indian truck, right? That's something that is on our list.
The Afghanistan food is
really
good.
I was just going to say, I walked by the Afghan vendor
and I was delicious.
Like, oh, that smells so good and I so want it. So, Oshkosh Farmers Market, downtown Oshkosh, from when to when?
8 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. every Saturday through October 25th.
This weekend is July 5th. Of course, they're doing the flags and the veterans and all that stuff.
Yep.
Next week,
it is Christmas in July.
I love it. How about the website again?
www.osfmi.com.
Michelle, we love you.
We love you, too.
We do.
Thanks for having me.
Anytime.
Absolutely.
Promise you'll come back.
I always come back.
At some point, we're going to scare her away. More Mino and the Mayor on the way next on 98.3 and 96.5 WISS.
Mino and the Mayor is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WISS and WGBW weekday mornings from 6 until 9. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.com.
This is 92.7 WMDX Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. A mass shooting in Lexington, Kentucky, today leaves two people dead. It started at an airport.
The trooper had pulled over a vehicle on Terminal Drive after receiving a license plate reader alert in the area of Versailles Road. The trooper was shot and the suspect fled.
Police Chief Lawrence Weathers says the gunman went to Richmond Road Baptist Church in Lexington.
The suspect fired his weapon at individuals on church property. Preliminary information indicates that the suspect may have had a connection to the individuals at the church.
He shot four people. Two died. Police showed up and shot the gunman dead. One of two wildfires on or near the north rim of Grand Canyon National Park have burned down the Grand Canyon Lodge, the visitor center, and 50 to 80 other structures, say park officials. The park's evacuated and closed to visitors. More rain again, raising the Guadalupe River in central Texas a week after the flood disaster. This is ABC News. Numbers of ospreys are declining in